webinar, and we'll be talking about a resource guide that we have developed titled The 7 Steps to Use Routine Information to Improve HIV/AIDS Programs. We're excited to see so many of you again here joining us, and many of the same names are showing. So we appreciate everybody's interest in these issues. Today, I'm Tara Nutley, and I am here with my colleague, Nicole Judice. We are both data demand and use specialists on measure evaluation. Now, before we get into the technical content this morning, I'd like to go over a couple of issues about webinars for those of you that are new today. First of all, if you lose connectivity, you can re-enter the meeting room by clicking on the webinar link that we provided in the original email. And also, if you have trouble with your audio, you can refer to the conference call instructions in the upper right-hand corner of your screen. And that's obviously for those of you that are in the U.S. We have a conference number that you can call into. And lastly, if you are stuck and need a suggestion, you can email Leah Gordon, one of our technical support people here, and she can help you out. Okay. Also, here's a couple of tips for participating in our discussion today. All voice is muted until the end of the webinar when we have our question and answer session. So if you would like to interrupt, ask a question, you can raise your hand. If you look at the top gray menu bar of your screen, there's an icon of a person raising their hand. You can click that on, and we will notice that and pause. There's some other icons in there, too. If you'd like to look at those, you can participate in other ways as well. When it's time for the discussion answer question, you can speak into your microphone to ask your question. You have to make sure your mic is enabled, though. Up at the top, there's a little microphone icon, and you have to enable that. And then when you finish, please mute that as well. And lastly, you can type your questions into the Q&A window, which will appear at that time at the top of your screen. And that's how you can participate. And lastly, we are recording this webinar, and it will be made available on the Measure Evaluation website. So if you get knocked off and can't get back on or can't hear, you can always listen to the recording later on. So what we'll do is I will give you a brief overview of data demand and use. This is the same overview we give for every webinar. So those of you who have heard it, please just hang on. I think it's important to put the topic that we're discussing today in context. And then we'll go over the tool. Nicole will present the tool. And then she will also talk about how it has been applied in two countries, I believe. And then lastly, we'll have questions and answers. And then we will finish up at 10 o'clock. So let's just quickly talk about why we're here, why this topic of data demand and use is an important one. We're all aware of the challenges involved in providing quality health services in the context where we work. In many of the countries and the health programs that we're supporting, they're facing a high disease burden, a growing population, inadequate numbers, and poor distribution of qualified health workers, and frequently even an inadequate health system to support the distribution of services that we're trying to improve. So it's in this situation that it becomes extremely important to make the best use of our limited resources. We're all, you know, functioning in a context where our resources are finite. So we really need to develop strategies, policies, and interventions that are targeted to the highest needs in these contexts. And the best way to do that, of course, is to rely on data. I like to show this quote. I think it kind of sums it all up very nicely. This is from one of our colleagues that we were working with in Nigeria. He's a national level policymaker. And he said, without information, things are done arbitrarily and one becomes unsure of whether a policy or program will fail or succeed. If we allow our policies to be guided by empirical facts and data, there'll be a noticeable change in the impact of what we do. I want to take a minute and just talk about what we mean by data demand and use. I feel like it helps to kind of see where we're trying to go, what we're trying to achieve. When we talk about data use, we talk about using data in the decision-making process. And this can be either in the context of monitoring a program. So there's not a specific decision-making moment here when you're monitoring programs. But what you're doing is you're regularly reviewing and consulting your data to determine if you're on track, you're meeting your objectives, or if things are off, if you're not seeing as many clients, there's a drop in services. So using data within this decision-making process is a very important part of what we are trying to improve. And then there's the more kind of obvious uses of data around creating or revising a program or strategic plan, developing or revising a policy, advocating for a policy or program based on some new information, or allocating resources. The point here that we're making is that data use is more than just reporting, more than just filling out your M&E reports, your M&E forms. While, of course, reporting is a critical precursor to using data, you need to report it to the right people. It has to be aggregated up through the health system. Reporting is not data use. We need to go farther. We need to use that data in the decision-making process. We also like to define data demand. And here what we're talking about is that decision makers specify what kind of information they want. They know their information needs. They know what upcoming decisions they have to make. And they actively seek out that information. So this is all very active data use. Here you see the measure evaluation data-informed decision-making cycle. And this is an important graphic because it also expresses this concept of it not being a one-time event. Data-informed decision-making takes time and it implicates many people. The idea of this cycle starts with a basic M&E system and the collection of information, as you see here in the blue box on the side. And this includes ensuring that the information is available and in a format that is easily understood by relevant stakeholders so that the information can be interpreted and used to improve programs and policies. And that is the blue availability box on the top part of the circle, which then moves to utilization. The cycle supports the assumption that the more positive experiences a decision maker has in using information to support a decision, the stronger the commitment will be to improving data collection systems. So this cycle follows back up again to collection. And the stronger all of this becomes so that you continuously generate quality information, make it available, and lead to repeat data use. You'll note that this cycle is supported by coordination and collaboration in the orange. The coordination is among data users and data producers, as well as between management systems and other organizational supports that facilitate and support data-informed decision-making. And we talk about data users and data producers as really an important two kind of types of professionals that need to collaborate and coordinate their efforts. The data user being more of the decision maker and the data producer being more of the M&E professional and the researcher. And that these two professionals don't always interact that seamlessly. So we need to facilitate that happening. And lastly, the cycle is supported by improving capacity of individuals and organizations to ensure that they're equipped with the skills to collect and use data. So how do we improve data-informed decision-making? We like to talk about how data use obviously is part of M&E. It just doesn't happen frequently and regularly enough. So every data use intervention is implemented on a foundation of existing improvements to M&E systems. The interventions are overarched by this collaboration between data users and data producers. And the sets of interventions that we promote have to do with tool application in the pink box, capacity building in the blue box, and organizational support in the green box. The first five webinars that we've discussed have been around tool application. Our next week's webinar will be around capacity building, and we are adding one more webinar around improving organizational supports. So it really is a comprehensive approach that we promote on measure evaluation. And while we're focusing on tool application in these webinars, the other two sets of interventions are equally important. So now let's move over to Nicole Judice, who will talk about the seven steps to using data in decision.
Welcome, everyone. I want to start off by underscoring one of our core data demand and use principles, which Tara has described, but I want to highlight this principle in particular because it is what the seven steps is all about. Data users and data producers can work together to identify key programmatic questions and concerns and can link these questions to the data available in their respective settings. These data can be used to inform decisions, and one of the key components that I want to point out at this stage are the data users and data producers working together. Of course, that's for those of you that are familiar with data demand and use tools or have participated in these webinars, you're familiar with the stakeholder analysis tool. And it's a theme, bringing data users and data producers together is a theme throughout our data demand and use work. These seven steps is rooted in that. You would be to be able to go through each of the seven steps, you would have to have both data users and data producers at the table. So why use the seven-step approach? Why did we develop these seven steps? We found in our work of applying the tools and helping to build capacity that people needed more specifics on how to bring people together, how to lead discussions among data producers and users about what information they needed to know, what types of decisions they needed to make, how they would bring the data together, how they would analyze that data and interpret that data and apply it to the decisions that they were interested in making. And so these seven steps are meant to highlight that whole process and provide detailed guidance on what needs to be done. It encourages more strategic and effective use of data by targeting and focusing a team on specific questions. It ensures involvement, as I mentioned, of both data users and producers. And something that we've been told is very useful in the seven-step guide is that it includes examples, it includes job aids that can be used in different settings, and it includes templates. So you can photocopy or use these templates over and over again in the process. Stepwise guidance helps us to identify and understand the trends that we're seeing in our program and our programmatic needs. It helps us to more effectively plan and set priorities within our programs and support changes that we know are coming or have already been implemented in service delivery. It helps us to support requests for additional resources and seek information about how our program is working. It can help us to provide more evidence-based clinical decision-making and communicate the importance of our services to the community. So as I mentioned, there are some key components to the seven steps guide, and we have the guide available in hard copy as well as on the Measure Evaluation website. The guide begins with a description of the seven steps, which we are going to go through in this webinar today. It includes several illustrative examples in different programmatic HIV programmatic areas like PMTCT and HIV counseling and testing. It includes job aids around data analysis and provides stepwise guidance on how to calculate a rate, how to calculate a ratio, and other descriptive statistics. And it includes tools and templates that you can use as a part of this process. So the seven steps are step one, to identify questions of interest. Step two is to prioritize those questions. Step three is to identify data needs and potential sources of those of these data. Step four is to transform data into information. Step five is to interpret the information and draw conclusions. Step six is to craft solutions and take action. And step seven is to continue to monitor key indicators to make sure that you're seeing the improvement that you were hoping to see based on the solution that you developed and implemented. So we'll go through with a little more detail on each of the steps. Step one, identifying the questions. Of course, this is one of the most important components, figuring out which questions will respond to your team's true needs and priorities. What are you interested in knowing? What will be useful for you to know about your program, how your program is working? Is your program or service improving clients' health? Are you retaining clients in your service? How do you know if there are problems or if your program is not achieving its objectives? You would go through a discussion process and in order to identify very specific questions that you will then, in the subsequent steps, respond to with data. These are just a few of the questions that you would consider in the process. And in the guide, we outline a few different ways that you can go about defining these questions. You can use a group brainstorming approach or a staff meeting. You can also map out your service and find where there may be bottlenecks along the way that you want to investigate further. Step two is to prioritize the key questions of interest. This is an effort at getting your group to really focus on one specific question at a time. And the reason we do this is because, first of all, we want to make sure that the questions that you are trying to answer are programmatically relevant, are answerable within the context and within the data that you have, that they are actionable, that you are able to take action based on the answer to your question, and that the question is timely, that you are not asking a question that would be more relevant to ask, say, 2 years from now, but are answering a question that you can take action on now. It's important to ensure the question is specific. All of these different criteria will help to make sure that the answer to your question will be relevant and will be something that you and your team can immediately respond to, whether you need to make some sort of programmatic improvement or need to make a change in how you're operating. This is just a graphic to show how you go through a process of developing an initial question. You may refine that question and make it more specific, and then you may use some sort of ranking process or prioritization process to come to a final question. We've included a tool in the guide that can help a group who may be having trouble prioritizing a question to come to a resolution. So as you can see across in the top row, you would have programmatic relevance, whether or not the question is answerable, actionable, and timeliness, and you would have each member of your team rank the degree to which they think that question is relevant, answerable, actionable, etc. You would then be able to see which questions are of highest priority to the team overall. So now that you have a very specific priority question for your group, it's time to bring in the data. And while your M&E officers or SI team should have been involved throughout step one and step two, in step three and step four, you'll find that the M&E team or the SI team is very important. They will help you identify which data will respond to the question that your team has identified and the sources of those data. They will help identify how frequently you need to monitor this information to be able to get a picture of the situation. They will help you identify if the data already exist and if they're available and if these data are of sufficient quality. Step four is to transform the data into information, and this involves isolating the required indicators within your data source, analyzing the data and calculating the indicator, and depicting that data in some sort of image if relevant. So we've seen in many of the settings that we've worked in, there's a comfort with regular programmatic reporting, but there may not be a high comfort level with doing additional analyses. And so we've provided, as a part of the guide, some guidance on how you would conduct different types of analyses. Also, we provide guidance and job aids about developing graphics. Not necessarily in Excel. This is something that can be developed by hand on paper, but guidance on how to develop a graphic that is easy to understand and will be clear to your audience. Step five is where we convene the group or team again, and we use the information that was generated in step four. We want everyone to be involved in interpretation because we find that oftentimes everyone has a different perspective about what's actually happening on the ground, what's actually happening in the course of program or service delivery. So the M&E staff may have a view into why a program or service is operating in a certain way or why the data are pointing in a certain direction. So it's important to bring that team together to look at the graphs or tables or information that have been produced as a part of step four as guidance within the step five on interpreting data. Some questions that you can ask within your team about questions you can ask about these data in order to interpret them. And interpretation is the process of adding meaning to information by making connections and comparisons and by exploring causes and consequences. It helps you look at the relevance of your findings. It helps you look at the reasons that you're seeing these findings. It leads you to consider other data, if relevant, other indicators or other data that may not be generated by your own organization. And sometimes it leads you to conduct further investigation, whether that is something like a client survey or whether that's research within your facility or program. You may need to bring in other data, but it doesn't mean that other data is required to answer the questions that you're trying to answer. Step six is to craft solutions and take action. So we've gotten through the process of identifying a question, of bringing the data together and interpreting these data. So now we understand the services and that our program is providing. We understand what problems may exist. And it's time to craft solutions and start to address those problems. Once again, you want to maintain that group of stakeholders and that have been involved throughout the process. And depending on the scope of the problem or the specific nature of the problem, you may need to engage other stakeholders. You may need to engage clients. You may need to engage NGOs. They may have, these other stakeholders may have a different perspective on how you can address the problem that you've identified. you would discuss conclusions from the interpretation and think about potential solutions, and then further specify and craft these solutions into an action plan. We provide some discussion guidance in the Seven Steps Guide, some discussion guidance that you would use in developing a program action plan. And we also provide a template that you can use or adapt to your own needs for defining actions that you would need to take to respond to the question and thus the problems that you've identified. And step seven is very important. It's continuing to monitor these indicators that you have chosen to take action on. We want you to monitor implementation of your action plan that was developed in step six and consider how often and for what length of time you need to continue monitoring that action plan. You may need to develop a tool for monitoring. We've provided some examples of projects who have developed tools like this. For instance, URC's Quality Assurance Project has developed tools that they use within facilities that they're supporting to consistently, over time, monitor the indicators that they've identified as concern, indicators of concern for them. And here's just an example of how you can set aside, you know, a very basic spreadsheet, set aside indicators that you're monitoring over time and continue to plot those to look at the changes over time. If you see that improvement and you see that you no longer need to monitor those indicators, you can move on to other questions, to other indicators. Or it may point to a need to change your action plan. I want to point out for those of you who are familiar with the framework for linking data with action or who were participating in the last webinar, that the framework is something that can be used to document the overall seven steps process. It creates a time-bound plan for information-informed decision making. And it can help monitor the use of information in decision making. So you would plot your program or policy question. Let's see if I can get the pointer here. You can plot your question here in the second column. You can look at the decision makers that would be responsible for taking action based on that, the answers to that question. You would plot the indicators or data required, the data source, the timeline, so when you plan to conduct the analysis, when you plan to have the data available for interpretation, when you plan to make any decisions or take action based on those these data, and how you plan to communicate these data to the group, whether it be through graphs, whether it be through a staff meeting, through a presentation to the community. There are different options for this communication channel. And then you can also plot the ultimate decision or action that has come about because of this team's process. The reason this framework may be useful to a group is to look at how they've used data over time. It can be helpful in a variety of different ways. It can monitor their process of using data. It's something that they can show their donors, their headquarters organizations, for how they are actively using the data that they are collecting and producing. It can also underscore a need to report on other indicators that are programmatically relevant. So I want to give you a very brief example. this is related to PMTCT. In this example, the organization was concerned about retaining clients in their facilities. And this is through the process of testing and counseling for pregnant women coming to their facility. So the management team identified the question, what percentage of PMTCT clients are counseled and tested? and they selected indicators that they were routinely collecting as a part of their patient register. They selected the number of new ANC clients, the numbers with receiving post-test counseling and were HIV positive, and those being post-test counseled who were HIV negative. And they plotted this over the different facilities they were supporting to try and understand how these facilities are retaining clients and if there may need to be some intervention. So they put this into a table, as you can see here, facility 1, facility 2, 3, and 4 across the top, and the indicators that they chose to monitor. And then they plotted these data into a graph. They wanted to understand what percentage of women coming into ANC were counseled and tested. And looking at this graphic, they discussed different questions that came out of this graph. Which facility is performing better or worse than expected? What is the trend over time for these facilities? They decided to go back and look at how these facilities are functioning over time and how they are retaining clients over time. They discussed how they would assess each facility's performance based on the data. Everyone knows that there are specific contextual reasons that a facility may perform a certain way, and they wanted to take those into account. And then they discussed what other data or information should be considered in providing recommendation or guidance to the facilities. We've used the 7 steps guide now in a couple of countries in the format of training workshops. In Nigeria, we've used the 7 steps and have distributed the guide at the facility level, organizational, and state levels in Tanzania through training workshops and coaching at the organizational level. And we've also introduced the guide to several organizations and in different electronic forums. So, for instance, we've worked in partnership with Catholic Relief Services and have introduced the guide to their global HIV staff. We have also introduced some of the steps in the guide through different forums, such as the Virtual Leadership Development Program and the TB Care Data and Analysis Forum. And so we continue to distribute the guide and share it with others. And there will be, over time, because this is a new resource, over time we will be able to monitor how it's being used and interest that's raised based on the 7 steps guide. So now we'd like to take any questions that you may have.
Can everybody see the question box in there on their screen here? Sure, I'm going to repeat for you, Stephanie. We have a question on the phone for those of you that are not on the phone, so hold on. Go ahead, Stephanie.
When you're using the 7 steps guide in a workshop setting, various stakeholders, data users, and data producers, do you ask them to bring their own data because it's very context is that part of the process? Maybe for the workshop, they have to do a little work in getting their data.
Let me repeat that. So Stephanie asks, if when you're doing this type of training with the 7 steps in a workshop setting, do you ask participants to bring their own data? Because it seems pretty context specific. So Nicole, would you like to answer that?
Thanks, Stephanie. We've had varying degrees of success with people bringing their own data. So we've allowed flexibility in having people bring their own data and using that as a part of the exercise, or using exercises that we've already developed as examples. And so we have had some instances where people have brought their own data. they've generated a question they're interested in, and they've been able to look in their data and go through those steps. But we've also had instances where the team will generate questions that they're interested in. They will even talk about where these data would come from based on the forms that they're using to report. But then in the analysis section, they would use exercises that we have developed that are specific to HIV, but may not reflect all of the issues in their context.
I just wanted to add that we have yet to actually implement this, but we are developing right now. We're adapting the 7 steps to use at the national level in Rwanda. And there we have done our homework and have specific data. It's not a full data set, but we have some data available that is Rwandan data for the group to use in its national level data. So they didn't bring it. They didn't go find it. We've kind of structured an exercise around this information. Okay, we have another question here from Beth Gikonyo. How would you bring the data users and producers together if their data demand is quite different and their M&E capacity is equally different as well? Nicole?
Thank you, Beth. This is a great question. It is a struggle sometimes to bring data users and producers together around the same issues and to have them work together. And that's something that we have had experience with at the organizational level with small NGOs, for instance. Oftentimes, there is some conflict between M&E teams, between data users and data producers, with data users not entirely understanding how data producers or M&E staff can help them with their programs. They may be seen as purely for a reporting function, purely related to donor resources. And on the other side, M&E staff may have some levels of frustration with data users not necessarily asking questions or using the data that they're producing. What we've found is that by bringing these groups together with some facilitated process and some understanding that the M&E staff can help the data users by bringing in data to respond to their specific questions, and by improving the data users' understanding that the data producers know what's going on in the programs. Oftentimes, the M&E staff know very well what's going on at the field level because they're going there to collect the data. So through our workshops, we found a lot of success in bringing these groups together. And I think that that's the first step, is getting people to decide that they need some information, they need to generate it internally, and they need to work together to do that.
Thank you, Nicole. We have another question here from Alimu, who asks, how would you differentiate the 7 steps process from the data triangulation? They look so similar to me. This is a great question, Alimu. When the 7 steps guide was developed, and it's called the 7 steps guide to using routine information, it really was, the target audience was kind of subnational. Of course, you can use it nationally, but when using routine information, the focus is on specific questions that are more relevant to routine data. So, and data triangulation, as I understand it, the method kind of developed by University of San Francisco and CDC is really more of asking much bigger questions, like, has there been a shift in behavior among men who have sex with men and sex workers, where you would need different kind of data. You'd need more survey data, more data that's representative to the populations you're looking at. So they're complementary, they're rooted absolutely in the same principles of identifying your question, prioritizing, getting your data together, all of that. But this guide is really specific to a little more of routine information use, maybe more targeted toward the types of questions you'd ask subnationally. And also, it's set up as in a guide format. When you go to do a triangulation exercise, it can be a little challenging to understand where to start and how to do it. Whereas the guide here provides some concrete examples of where this has been done. And the questions are just smaller. They're not quite as large in scope. So I hope that answered your question. Any other questions out there? We'll take just a minute to see if people want to type in anything additional. I'll also provide the resource for the triangulation materials for those of you that aren't familiar with those.
And if you haven't already seen the guide, if you look onto your screen now, there's a small box towards the bottom middle or bottom right that says Online Resources. You can click on the 7 steps to use routine information to get directly to the document.
Well, it looks like there aren't necessarily any more questions. One thing I'd like to point out, so we, as I mentioned at the start of the webinar, this is webinar number 6, and initially this series was planned as a 7-part series. We've just been having so much fun, we added an 8th. So the last webinar will be on March 6th, webinar number 8, and it is titled Strengthening an Organization's Capacity to Demand and Use Data. And really what we'll talk about there is kind of bringing all of these pieces together. You know, we've talked about all the tools up until now. Next week I'll talk a little bit about some of our capacity building materials that we have available for use and some of the approaches we've used to build capacity and data demand and use. And then this last one on March 6th will discuss how there's certain organizational elements that can be implemented to facilitate data demand and use, you know, things around policies and procedures and other organizational and managerial supports like that. So the last one is a nice way to kind of wrap up the series and talk about our different strategies, tools, and capacity building materials as a comprehensive approach. So please join us for the last one. But it looks like we have no more questions around the 7 steps guide. Check it out, everybody. It's a great resource. It's definitely intended also to be used as an off-the-shelf resource. You can kind of open it and follow it through. It's very self-explanatory. So please do that. You'll also note that a new box opened up on your screen called Closing Comments. We would greatly appreciate it, if you're willing to include your email address. We like to follow up with people that have been exposed to our materials to see if and how they've used them. So we encourage everyone to kind of just type in your addresses so we can capture who was here today and maybe get in contact with you in the future. So once again, we thank you all for taking the time. And Nicole has something to say. Hold on one second.
I just wanted to point out the resources on these slides, that we have the Data Demand and Use Toolkit and training resources available at www.measureevaluation.org/DDU. Also, Data UseNet is a listserv that you may already be a member of, but if you're not, we share resources. On occasion, we also, I think, quarterly lead forums. And so you can send an email to listserv@unc.edu and follow these directions here on your screen for joining Data UseNet.
Great. Great. Thanks, Nicole. I had forgotten to mention that. Yeah, Data Usenet is a listserv I moderate. It's a great resource. You can also send in questions and ask the community members. We're over 900 people now that are members on Data Usenet, so it's really a broad kind of resource for you. All right. So please join us next week. You've also see here our contact information if you have any questions about this week. And next week we'll be talking about our training and capacity building resources. So once again, thanks.